Alors, my here we are in La Clusa and my name is Christiane and I have the restaurant La Bergerie.
Well, that was mine host, lovely Christiane there. This is Anthony Tan with another great episode of Cycling Central's podcast featuring my trusty travelling companions, Ian Parker of the Press Association in England and Ian Chadband of the Daily Telegraph. Chad, what do you think of the tour so far?
Oh, it's been a... I'm not sure what sort of accent I'm trying... Hi. This is silly. Well, you've just heard from, the owner of this restaurant, this lovely restaurant. Here we are, positioned right in the middle of the Alps. The stage finished in Le Grand Bornan today. Christopher Froome is just 48 hours away from riding into Paris in the Maillot Jaune. We have to remember that Sunday's finish along the Champs-Élysées is a nighttime finish for the very first time. The centenary edition is going to go out with a bang. Ian Chadband, it's nice to hear your impersonations, but what I do want to hear more of is what you actually thought of today's stage, because for me it was a bit of a non-event. With due respect to Rui Costa, who took his second stage today, I felt it was the last chance saloon for any of those riders to actually make it a dent into Chris Froome's advantage, and now I think he's going to walk away with victory.
Wasn't it weird? I mean, what was going on there? Then there was one single attack in the on the final climb in the whole day. Nobody put him under pressure. Froome couldn't believe it, and neither could Brailsford. Dave Brailsford thought exactly the same. He just couldn't quite comprehend, you know, how in this last chance saloon nobody was taking a risk. They had to take a risk today.
They did, Chad, but perhaps they were just so tired they couldn't do anything. I have to say that I think it was one of the hardest final weeks of the Tour de France I've probably seen in 15, 20 years. That's the danger, I think, when you present what it promises to be a spectacular race. You might not get that if the riders are simply so tired they can't race.
Well, I think there was an element of that, I'm sure. I mean, Froome had said himself afterwards, didn't he, that I'm completely nailed, absolutely exhausted. None of his main rivals looked as though they were up for the fight today. I mean, we thought Contador would try something, and he didn't. They must have all been completely shot, I suspect. But I'm still kind of surprised that you know, somebody like Quintana, for instance, didn't have a go earlier. He left it until that very last climb when Rodriguez went, and it was too late then. Anyway, even if they'd got away, they wouldn't have got very much at that point. There was a downhill run into the finish.
Mm. So. Parky, what do you make of the events that transpired today? We have to give some credit to Rui Costa. I mean, this was a guy who won the Tour of Switzerland. There's two warm-up races for the Tour de France, the Dauphiné, the Critérium du Dauphiné, and the Tour de Suisse. He won the Tour of the Suisse for the second consecutive time. Now, he and Valverde had off days, and then also he went to the aid of Valverde on a previous stage, so it left Quintana, a 23-year-old, to be their leader. But was it less than what you expected?
Well, it was in the GC race, yeah. I mean, it was just sort of two or three long attacks, and Ryder Hegedal going off early. Pierre Roland doing his best to get back into the polka dot jersey, which he's kind of done by default. He will wear it tomorrow, but although Froome still leads that.
Just on that, Parky, I think Roland also said that he doesn't really stand a chance of actually taking it for real because the climb to Annecy-Semnoz is hard.
He said that, yes, he said that tonight, but he will wear it tomorrow, won't he? So he'll have one more day of that, but... And obviously Rui Costa timed it to perfection at the end there. You obviously saw Roland was running out of steam and went for it. It was a little bit of a damp squid maybe from what we were expecting. But I think we probably got the warning signs yesterday, because if you heard what Contador said after Alpe d'Huez, he said that he tried to attack there and he didn't have the legs. If you've done two ascents of the Alpe d'Huez, and then you start today's stage with two all-category climbs straight out of the gate, I don't think your legs are going to come back. You're only going to get worse. So for me, it wasn't a total surprise that it didn't come from him, certainly. Maybe Quintana might have had a go, but he was probably feeling exactly the same way.
Yeah, Chad, this triptyque of alpine stages, almost 150 kilometres of climbing in just 3 days, and that comes off the back of the final individual time trial. Perhaps they might change... Well, they obviously change the course next year, but maybe make it not as hard because it just really doesn't lend itself to offensive riding. I mean, we expected, well, we wanted at least Sky to be besieged or ambushed by Movistar and Saxo Tinkoff, but I think, you know, the only attack we saw from the GC riders was on a uncategorized climb right towards the end of today's stage.
Well, I mean, maybe it's obviously because they put these three back to back because it's the 100th tour and they wanted this spectacular alpine triptych, as you call it. I mean, it sounds great in paper. We were all looking forward to it ourselves, to be honest. It's just that in reality, I suspect that one there needs to be a rest day or an easier stage in between three on the trot. Didn't work because it's basically this stage could have been, and on paper this stage looked like the most difficult of the lot, and it's turned out to be a wet lettuce.
So Chad, if we assume that, well, you know, at the start of today, second to fifth place was separated by just 47 seconds. At the end of today, the placings, those time gaps remain. So we've still got from second place Alberto Contador 5 minutes and 11 seconds behind Chris Froome. Fifth place, we've got Joaquim Rodriguez in 5 minutes and 58 seconds. So the podium, at least the minor places on the podium, are still up for grabs, because if you say 47 seconds separates second to fifth, and you've got the climb to Annecy Semnoz, which is a very difficult climb, it's not as long as the ones they traversed today. It's about 12 kilometres long, but it's at 8.5%. It's very difficult, so I think the podium's still up for grabs. Well, Quintana can maybe swap places with Contador.
Well, the podium is up for grabs, but the race is lost. And the one good thing that I hope comes out tomorrow is that we have this great mountaintop finale. You know, it's been an epic tour in its own way, and for Froome, it's been quite magnificent. I think he's been a tremendous the way he's performed, and I'd like to see him go out with a. It might be a bit of a dream, because, you know, I don't suppose it will happen, but you'd like to see him on that last climb. You'd like to all see the contenders having one last fling up Semnoz and see how it goes. And Froome, perhaps. I mean, what can you imagine that? If Froome crossed the line after this 100th tour, winning the penultimate and the key stage, and sealed his victory that way with a third mountaintop win. I mean, that would be sensational.
Parky, do you think that's something he wants to do, or is he happy simply just preserving his advantage?
I don't think he necessarily wants to do it. I think the only way that happens is you talk about the podium battle still being alive, and if you do start to see Contador, Quintana and Rodriguez scrapping for that time, and they're attacking each other, Froome may have to cover that, and if he then finds himself at the top of the mountain alongside them, maybe he'll go for it. But his sole mission tomorrow is to make it to the end of the race with that lead.
It's funny, like, if we just speak a little briefly about Quintana, for me, he's the absolute revelation of this year's Tour de France. It was a long shot for him to actually win the Tour de France, you know, in total, but really, if he finished second or third, I mean, this was a guy who, you know, when he was a teenager, his parents couldn't afford to buy him a bike. Well, they had to save up something like half a year so they could afford a 30 American dollar bike. I mean, and then because they didn't want him to walk, I think it was the 9 miles to school each day, which was apparently a massive trek. And they were worried, you know, concerned about his safety. So really, this is a real rags to riches story.
Yeah, we've been talking about him, haven't we, in the car? And yeah, it is a fantastic story. I think, you know, he's 23. We have seen one or two sort of rookie mistakes, I think, in the timing of his attacks every now and then, particularly on Vontu. He probably went too early, and that cost him. But certainly we've seen a whole heap of potential. He is a climber, and this course does suit him in terms of, you talk about how mountainous it is, but which has helped him this year. But yeah, at the age of 23, we're going to see him again. We're going to see a lot more of him.
Mm. What hasn't helped him is that, well, he is a tour debutant, so yeah, like you said, he made some rookie errors, but for the first week and a half, he was riding for Valverde. So you have to give this guy credit, because he was pretty much burying himself for someone else. He had never expected to be the leader. He even indicated so, even before the race began in Corsica, he was not the leader. I mean, to assume a leadership role halfway through the race and finish on the podium, I consider that to be a victory in itself.
Oh, fantastic achievement. And actually, if you know, we did say, didn't we, in that first week, that it kind of like it felt as though he was their best weapon. And it's a pity it wasn't the other way around, that you know, that instead of him going off of the, you know, doing all the sort of surprise attacking, and it was that they used Valverde as the decoy and him as the sort of main weapon. Of course, he's too young, I suppose, but look what a talent, you know, goodness me. And as you say, that okay, Froome thinks that he might be able to reign for, you know, 4 or 5 years, but when you see somebody like him and the talent that he's got. And if he starts to believe, then of course, you know, he's going to be a major threat to Froome down the years.
Chad, a lot of people said, you know how you said, oh, Froome's looking at winning for the next 4 or 5 years. They said the same thing. I know we're talking about GCs and versus stage winners, but they said the same thing about Cav. Now, he has won consistently for 4 or 5 years, but some people said he'd just win for maybe conceivably 8 to 10 years, but there's always some guy who comes out of the woodwork, isn't there, from left field and surprises everyone. So you can never, I think that's why Cavendish during the Commonwealth Games in Delhi, he was a little upset that he wasn't getting paid enough by his former team, because a professional bike rider's career is only 10 years. You have to make the most of it, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, people will come along and challenge Froome. I don't know that, you know, maybe this is his year. Maybe this is this is as good as he gets. I mean, I suspect he will get, I think he'll get even better, because, you know, they've now found the way for him to operate. Sorry, I'm just getting our dinner ready here. Good old, what's your name? Christian, sorry. She's gone now. God bless her.
She's got a nice smile.
She's lovely.
We're all taken, so.
Yeah, mate. So anyway, no, sorry, but what was I saying?
Well, no, I think you actually can finish what you were saying. Parky, I just want to hear from both of you about what's the feeling, you know, running, coursing through your veins. You know, this is a guy who's about to make history. I know the first Briton to win the Tour de France was last year with Wiggins, but still, is it equally historic for you, or is a lot has been made about this guy isn't really a Brit, and Froome defended that the other day when asked in a press conference. I think it was by a British journalist, in fact. So how do you feel about... Do you feel Chris Froome, is a true Brit?
Well, yeah, I do, actually. Yeah, I do, because... listen, these sort of barriers of nationality and, you know, the lines that are set out, I mean... They're so blurred these days anyway, but the bottom line is, and I've done a lot of, talked to a lot of people in Kenya, where he was born lived his early life. Then he was schooled in South Africa, which is, so he got his appetite for the sport in Kenya. He learnt to cycle, you know, competitively in South Africa. But all those people who've worked with him in Kenya say, look, there was no chance that he was ever going to succeed in Kenya. He needed the backup of the British system, and he's from a British background. You know, his dad's British. He's lived in, you know, everything that he's done. Has been Britain has been part of it. And he's very passionate about that. And it's under the British system that he has improved as a rider dramatically over the last 5 or 6 years. So I'm always a bit uncomfortable with this kind of idea about, you know, the Britishness or otherwise of somebody. But it is a fact that that British sportsmen who've the public can decide that they look at them and they think, well, I don't see them as real Brits. Maybe like Greg Rozedsky, the old Canadian-born tennis player. And even Mo Farah, our greatest ever runner, potentially, you know, distance runner, who spent his young life in Somalia. I think there's, you know, even though he came to Britain about when he was about 8 or 9, you know, he didn't... I noticed that last year we thought he was going to be, you know, be an outstanding potential favourite to win the Sports Personality of the Year. And he finished something. He didn't even finish in the first three, which was extraordinary because it was, you know, some of the greatest performances ever by a British sportsman. So, you know, I think there is a kind of element that people still look at certain athletes and see them as being more British, inverted commas, than other ones. And Wiggo, you know, was always, you couldn't be more English and British than Wiggo. That was the thought. And so he'll never be a Wiggo, but I think he'll win them over. I think he'll win this country over.
Yeah. Parky, how do you feel about it? Obviously, Chad indicated, Wiggo is the quintessential Brit.
Yeah, but this is the thing, because, I mean, we've sort of trained ourselves to stop doing it. We always used to refer to Froome in our stories as the Kenyan-born Brit.
Do you still do that?
No, and you don't. I mean, at the time you were doing it, not to sort of say, oh, by the way, there's an asterisk on this guy's Britishness. You're doing it to sort of introduce him because he's still not that well known. Not like Wiggins, who'd had, you know, several years of being a prominent sportsman through the Olympics and things. And so I've stopped doing that because people take it as being an asterisk. But then I don't think it's ever appeared in any story in the British press about Wiggins. He was born in Belgium. You know, it's where do you draw these lines? I mean, everybody has a different story, a different background. But in terms of the historicness, it's not as historic. There's only ever one guy who's the first Brit to win the Tour. But I do think it's probably indicative of the rapid rise of British cycling that, you know, you wait 100 tours or 99 tours for one British winner to come along, and all of a sudden there looks like they're going to be two, and who knows how many more down the line. So,
Well, British, Kenyan-born, whatever, really, what we are going to see is Chris Froome ride down the Champs-Élysées Sunday evening in Paris and be crowned champion of the Centenary Tour de France.
Anthony, I know you want to stop because you want to eat the very, very, very enjoyable food that's in front of you, but you're the historian, mate. You tell me, 100th tour, a historic tour, have we got a champion worthy of that 100th tour?
I think so. I would say that this year's Tour de France hasn't been... it wasn't the white-knuckle excitement that I've seen maybe in some other Tours de France, but it's not to take anything away from Chris Froome's achievement. However you need to win the Tour de France, that's how you prosecute that strategy of skies. It's fairly similar to the way they rode last year's Tour de France, and it's a winning strategy to win a Grand Tour, and particularly the Tour de France. The variables within, we've spoken about this previously, but the variables in classics are so much greater, and that's why they're bombed out. But the Tour de France, it's more controllable. They've managed to control all these X factors, as Jonathan Vaughters calls them. He said the X factor in track cycling is maybe 1/8 or 1/10 what it is in road cycling. But Sky have managed to find a way to control that.
But isn't it fair to say that he's given us some of the great, you know, two great rides, for instance, up Axe Trois Domaines, and then Von 2 is an epic stage, that he's gone and won. I mean, last year, everybody sort of moaned, oh, Wiggo won through the time trials. You can't say about this bloke. He's won on the time trials. He's also gone and won at the mountaintops, and he's done it in style. I mean, that's what my memory of it, and I'll think that he's won the 100th. If he wins it, which I expect him to now, that he'll have won it in style.
No, Chad, you're right. He is probably a more complete rider than Bradley Wiggins. He's won, as you said, two individual time trials. He's won two mountaintop finishes. He does not need to win a top Annecy Semnoz tomorrow. I think the French have taken to him. They've put out headlines reading Froome Naturelmont, and then they had a dossier, Froome's biological passport and his power data analyzed. The guy, the doctor from Française des Jeux, gave him said everything's above board. And I really, after what's transpired in the last 15 or 20 years with the doping being so rife, I think any clean winner we should applaud and just take them. I think we just need to trust the riders again, because I feel that if we're so mistrustful, if we're so cynical about everything, then I really don't think you should follow the sport anymore, because you're only doing yourself and the sport an injustice. So on that note, until tomorrow, we're tucking in with our food at the moment. Well, these guys are anyway. I'm yet to do so. I'm still talking, so I'll shut my gob, and until next time, it's bye for now.